In the name of God, the love of the beloved and the love sharer. Amen. The book of Isaiah falls into three distinct sections, spanning a period of some 230 years, from the 720s to the 510s before the Common Era. In the Old Testament lesson for last week, Advent Sunday, we encountered the voice of whom we now recognize as Trito or Third Isaiah. Third Isaiah, in around the year 515, addresses the Jewish exiles recently returned from Babylon to rebuild Jerusalem and the temple. In the Old Testament lesson for this morning, we move further back in time to the period immediately before the fall of Babylon, to the Persian armies in 550. In chapters 40 to 55 of the book of Isaiah, we hear the voice of Deutero, or Second Isaiah, who prophesies new political shifts that will result in the ending of a period of Jewish captivity in Babylon. Whereas 3rd Isaiah addresses the returnees, 2nd Isaiah is still looking forward to their release and eventual return. And the words of 2nd Isaiah are known to many today who either reject or know nothing about Christianity, because his words are memorialized in Charles Jennens's libretto, which Frederick Handel set to music in his oratorio, The Messiah. We cannot hear these words. Comfort ye my people, saith your God. Speak ye comfortably to Jerusalem, and cry unto her that her warfare is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned, for she hath received of the Lord's hand double for all her sins. We cannot hear these words without the music of Mr. Handel reverberating in our heads. One of the aspects that I sorely miss from 30 years of living in London is the ability to catch a thought-provoking play at the National Theatre at the South Bank, that wonderful complex of theatres and concert venues, museums and restaurants along the Thames at Waterloo, only a mere 20-minute tube ride from where we lived in North Greenwich. And I was reminded of how much I miss this when this last Wednesday evening I experienced the GAM Theatre's very fine production of Nick Payne's play Incognito. Incognito means to conceal one's identity. And Payne explores the fragility of our sense of self and the way it fluctuates according to the retention and loss of memory. Before the play begins, a number of quotations are projected onto the blank backdrop of the stage, all of which highlight the fluid and somewhat fragile nature of something we take for granted as automatic, namely a continuous sense of self. Identity is that sense of self that flows across time from one moment to the next. Am I, in this moment of time, the same person that I was yesterday and will be tomorrow? It's an important question, which is obscured by our tendency to assume memory and identity as fixed givens, like the division of time into past, present, and future. Some would claim that this continuity of self is a necessary illusion, but an illusion nevertheless. You see, our brains operate like pattern-matching machines. The machine analogy has its limits because human brains are like and yet not like pattern-matching computers. However, the ability to recognize experience in the present moment rests on the brain's rapid matching of current experience with a template of experience stored in memory. Occasionally, but less often than you might think, we do have a new experience, something that is unfamiliar. But what we experience as unfamiliar results when a current experience can't be quickly pattern matched by the brain, as many of us are learning to live with. Sometimes it takes a little longer to locate the right stack, the right section and volume in the library of the brain. Sometimes it's not possible to retrieve a template of memory because it's not there. The indigenous peoples of America first saw European ships by not seeing them, because their optic nerves had no memory template against which to categorize what they were seeing. And so memory plays fast and loose with our linear conception of time. In one way, memory is the past, yet the past appears incognito, as it were, unseen, unknown. Memory filters our perceptions of the present and shapes our expectations of the future. And when memory fragments, what happens to our sense of self, and with it our linear conception of identity flowing across time? This is the subject of Payne's play, Incognito. It's complicated to describe in the context of standing here before you, several feet above contradiction. But let me try. All new experience, as I've said, is filtered through the stored template of memory. And so the question, can anything really new happen? Well, the answer to that is yes. Because the brain's pattern matching is not an exact computer-like repetitive process. In the human brain, the new is dawning all the time through the process of the fragmentation of memory and the recombination in the sense of re-membering. Remembering is a recombination of the fragments of memory under the pressure of the present moment. And so memory fragmenting and recombining in the act of remembering into new configurations is happening all the time, but it's happening imperceptibly, until the moment we reach when we realize that something has changed, something has shifted, a new perspective is opening before us. The fragmentation of memory and its remembering in the present is not only true for individuals, but it's also true for communities. Communities, like individuals, have a collective memory. And like individuals, communities form stable identities through the operation of their collective memory. Now, Mark opens his gospel this morning with a skillful collective remembering of Jewish collective memory. He begins his story of the good news of Jesus Christ with the figure of Elijah, represented by John the Baptist. In the new figure of John the Baptist collective Jewish memory is remembered to evoke the familiarity of the image of Elijah, as a popular imagination might have thought about him as the forerunner of the Messiah. Mark then draws from the words of the second Isaiah, though regrettably for him, without the accompaniment of Mr. Handel's music. He quotes, "The voice of him that crieth in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord, and make straight the desert, in the desert a highway for our God." And in associating this collective Jewish memory with Jesus, Mark creates the opening scene for something new, in a remembering of the elements of Israel's collective memory that takes Israel's story into a new direction. And so remembering is not confined just to Judeo-Christian practice of reworking tradition in new directions to meet the needs of the present. Remembering operates at all levels of social and civic life, both as individuals and as communities, such as a nation. We are always in the process of remembering, recombining, reworking elements in our individual and collective memory. The question to ask is, for what purpose are we remembering? And what is the result? And I'm sure that for those of you who have ears to hear, the process of fragmenting and remembering offers new ways to interpret the collective forces at loose in our current political life. Advent is a time of waiting. Advent's waiting is not simply the literal waiting for a date in the calendar, December 25th. Advent's waiting is a deep, universal experience of tolerating frustration and weathering uncertainty. Advent's waiting is an invitation to risk having hope. And last week I spoke in greater detail about the dynamic of having hope. And as you all know, you can go back to previous sermons because they're all recorded online. The process of waiting in Advent is underpinned by the process of fragmentation and remembering of both individual and collective memory to take it into new direction. But for this moment in time, let me end with the words of the Irish poet and mystic John O'Donohue from his poem, A Morning Offering. And I do commend this poem to you as a wonderful way to start each new day. O'Donohue pens, "May my mind come alive today to the invisible geography that invites me to new frontiers, to break the dead shell of yesterdays, to risk being disturbed and changed. May I have the courage today to live the life that I would love, to postpone my dream no longer, but do at last what I came here for, and waste my heart on fear no more." The object of hope, which is the specific focus of the season of Advent, is a longing for a future that is better than the present we already have. And hope is underpinned not so much by what we remember from the past, but how we remember it and the purpose for which we remember it. Is remembering a slipping backward into the dead shell of yesterdays? Or is our remembering the opening of a way forward? And so, my friends, let's you and I, this Advent, remember so as to postpone the dream no longer and to waste our heart on fear no more. Amen.